Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We are talking this hour about fire in the Black Hills National Forest. It's that time of year where wildfires can become an issue. Darren Claybo is the state's fire meteorologist, and he joins us today from SDPP's Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in SDPP's Rapid City space to talk about wildfires and how they can vary across the state. We'll also look at the forecast trends for this season. Darren Claybo, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks again for having me, Lori.
Let's talk about the big picture, because with a statewide audience, not everybody is tuned into wildfires to the same degree because they affect people in the state differently. What's the overall risk in South Dakota? How do we sort of measure that?
Well, right now the overall risk is exceptionally low, and that really comes with all the precipitation that we've been seeing during the month of May and even since the year started on January 1st. You know, the eastern side of the state, they really have a kind of a early spring fire season, March, April. They start to peak in their fire season kind of after the snow melts. Central South Dakota, it's really a late summer and into fall. But if you get into western South Dakota, especially the Black Hills, it's really late June going through kind of the Labor Day weekend when they typically see the peak fire activity.
All right, so you've had some snow in the Black Hills pretty recently. Talk about some of the factors that go into the wildfire season.
Sure. Well, you know, in the Black Hills proper, really our wildfire season doesn't really start until the last week in June and extends through July and August. But if we start to see above average precipitation in the months of April and May, like this year we had exceptional precipitation across all of western South Dakota, looking from 2 to 6 inches above average, that moisture will help suppress wildfire activity going into the next 30 or 60 days. And so that May moisture, we're really going to see the effects of that May moisture going into to late June and even into July. And so it should mitigate the overall fire issues, at least for the next 30 to 60 days.
What are you looking for when you predict wildfires and the risk for them? What kind of climate or weather conditions are you evaluating?
Well, in the Black Hills National Forest, it's really 1 to 2 months, what we call antecedent precipitation, or the precipitation prior to the month we're looking at. So if we're looking at the month of July, we really want to look at the months of June and May to see what the precipitation patterns were. The other thing is above average temperatures. If you start to get extended periods of above average temperatures, 2 or more weeks, then that can really start to amp up your overall wildfire potential. And the last but biggest probably thing in the Black Hills National Forest itself is drought. During the summer months, it's practically a requirement to have drought in order to get to big wildfire seasons.
Tell us a little bit about how predicting things has changed. I know one of the recent times that you and I talked, you were working on a fire risk estimation tool, trying to really use data to make this more accurate and more effective so people know what to predict. Where is that project at?
Well, every year we start to assess more data, and that's kind of the benefit of having time. You know, the more time you have, the more data you can have. In terms of our overall fire risk estimation tool, that's a tool that we're really utilizing remote sensing, a lot of NASA capabilities, NOAA satellites, in order to really assess the overall fuels condition. But if we get into a year like this year, when things are so incredibly wet, those tools, they're almost thrown out the door, because we just know that we don't get large wildfire growth when we see these types of excessive precipitation events like we've had this spring. But progress on that tool is, it's going well. We're having a few hiccups trying to figure out how to digest some of the data that is out there in order to make it more usable for wildland fire managers. But I do think we are making some at least incremental progress.
All right, you mentioned fuel. So the wet conditions and the low risk of wildfires means there's fewer fires. And does that mean there's more growth and more fuel? Could we look at challenges in the future because of the season and really last year too?
You know, in our ecosystem that's out here, it's not, we don't really have a fuels limited fire season. We're really limited by the overall dryness. So on any given year, regardless of how dry it is, we typically have enough fuel to provide that fuel for big wildfire growth. This year, yeah, we are going to be growing more grass. There's going to be more herbaceous growth, but I have not seen any trends, historically speaking, at least in the past 20 to 25 years, that would suggest we have larger wildfire seasons following wet years.
All right. So tell us a little bit about some of those other historical, trends. As you study this, what causes, larger fires, smaller fires? Is it as simple as drought, or do humans have some kind of impact in how the forest is managed or how land is used?
Well, absolutely. Land use is probably has the biggest impact on wildfire activity across the state of South Dakota. If you look at eastern South Dakota, that historically was all tall grass or at least mixed grass prairie, the wildfire seasons were likely in the late summer months and the early fall months when you did have lightning, but the fuels were dry enough to burn. Now we've converted all that area to row crops, and a lot of it's irrigated row crops, and those types of plants just don't burn in the late summer and early fall months. And so we've seen a transition from the wildfire seasonality in those areas of the state from late summer or early fall months back to the months of March or April. And if you look at that time of the year, there's really no lightning activity. And so it really comes down to the human populations starting all the wildfires in those areas. If we transition into western South Dakota, specifically the Black Hills, lightning causes more than 50% of our fires in the months of June, July, August, and September. And so we really look at lightning as being kind of that primary ignition source for wildfires that's out there. But of course, you know, I say that more than 50% is caused by lightning. That means there's still a large proportion that's caused by humans. And so the more people we get in the Black Hills, that does amp up the overall risk for wildfires just because you have more potential for an ignition source. And so the land use is a big deal across the state. And if we look at different forestry practices in the Black Hills, yes, you know, you can log off areas, but that just transitions your overall fire risk from a canopy or a plume, a tree or a canopy dominated fire ecosystem, and it really transfers that fire risk to the ground, which typically is a little bit easier as wildland fire managers to fight, but those fires can definitely even move a little bit faster. And so the land use issue, it just transitions the risk either from one time period to another time period, or it transitions the risk from maybe getting a crown fire down to more an active surface fire. So, you know, humans have a large impact on the overall wildland fire management strategies that are out there.
All right, and let's talk about that lightning a little bit. How do you monitor that and predict? You know, is there a way to predict where something is coming, and to respond quickly to it based on, you know, what feels like a random lightning strike? How do you sort of intersect with that?
Well, we do get pretty good lightning data. It's basically up-to-the-minute lightning data that we can use to assess overall risk in particular areas. We talked before about how precipitation deficits and hot temperatures and drought can lead to conditions that are favorable to large wildfires. But during the summer months, if you have an area that hasn't seen rain in 10 or 15 days and you start spiking up the temperatures in that specific area, say western Pennington County, if that area were to get several lightning strikes, you then have that ignition source that overlays with the conditions that are most favorable for fire growth. And so we can really drill down into specific areas across western South Dakota, across all of South Dakota, to analyze where lightning might have the highest impact or the highest risk of becoming a large wildfire.
And then respond in a way that is more effective? How does that all intersect with, you know, the people on the ground that would have to really be present and deal with something early?
Yeah, I'm in constant communication with nearly all of our wildland fire resources across western South Dakota and in the Black Hills. I work through our Great Plains Dispatch, who dispatches all the resources. And if there are any areas that I have identified as being critical areas for, you know, having the potential for a large wildfire, if we do get lightning in those areas, you know, we will focus on those areas. We might pre-position resources near those areas in order to, you know, suppress or try to put out those fires if they do, in fact, pop up.
Talk a little bit about those resources and how they're impacted by wildfires in areas of the country that are looking at a different season. How do we share resources with other states, other regions?
Yeah, well, in South Dakota, we're part of what's called the Rocky Mountain Geographic Coordination Center, the Rocky Mountain area. It's a 5-state area, and everywhere within the Rocky Mountain region itself this year has been exceptionally wet. Colorado's had great snowpack. Wyoming's been very wet. We all know the flooding issues that have been impacting Nebraska and Kansas. And so I foresee our summer fire season across the region of having folks being able to send our resources not only out of state but out of region. If we look at coastal California going up into Oregon and Washington and even Alaska, I think those are the areas that we're going to see more wildland fire activity going into the summer months. And so we're able to free up our resources here to help out our neighbors wherever they may be.
All right. It seems a little hard to imagine wildfires in Alaska. Put that in perspective. What's going on there? Is that a new thing? Is that just something I have not yet heard of?
Well, right now there's been exceptional wildfire activity up in northern Alberta. We've seen some of the smoke coming in from those areas. Eastern British Columbia has been very, very dry, very warm. Back, you know, 3 or 4 weeks ago when we were getting snow in the Black Hills, northern Alberta was seeing temperatures in excess of 80 degrees. And mm-hmm. so those areas have been very dry, and that dryness and those warm temperatures have extended up into eastern and even into central Alaska itself. So those areas, you know, we were cold here, they were warm there. You kind of get this wavy jet stream pattern that sets up and creates more wildfire problems for different areas of the country.
I want to follow up with something you said about the fire risk estimation tool and sort of figuring out how to utilize that data. How quickly do you see this field of prediction and forecasting and response, leaping ahead as a researcher, you know, who's really deeply involved in this and kind of pushing that story ahead yourself? How quickly is it moving, and what's it like to be a part of that that process?
Well, it's a great feeling to be able to be part of that process and try to feel like you're helping the overall good. Our field is making progress, that's for sure. There's a lot more variables that go into big wildfires than a lot of people think of. A lot of it has to do with land use and fuels conditions, like we've already talked about. But a lot of it also has to deal with, you know, figuring out where the specific areas where we might see large wildfires actually are. And I think that's what we chatted about back in December. This fire risk estimation tool should really allow us to drill down into a sub-county area to see whether or not particular specific areas of states or of national forests are more susceptible to wildfires. And so we're looking at a variety of data coming from satellites to try to analyze that, but we're not quite sure what all the data yet means. And so there's another year or two of work that definitely needs to go into these projects in order to clarify everything.
That has to feel kind of good as a research scientist to sort of be in the middle of that. You want all the answers, but yet the process has to be pretty exciting.
The process is why I do what I do. And the frustrating part about science is oftentimes when you work towards an answer, you get 10 times more questions. And it becomes frustrating after a while, but you have to sometimes just block out those other questions and pursue the one question or the one hypothesis that you really wanted to answer in the first place. And so you almost have to put your blinders on and move forward and then come back to the questions that you've developed after you've come up with a solution for the problem you've tried to answer in the first place.
What have we learned about, you know, from the wildfires in California, for example, and, from even 2 years ago in the Black Hills? When there is an incident, when there's a large fire and, presents new challenges, how much is that information used moving forward?
We're always learning from historical events, from past events. You know, Northern California has seen some incredibly destructive and deadly wildfires, and we don't want to have that happen here in South Dakota. Granted, we don't have the population like they do here in South Dakota, but we can still utilize a lot of the information and even some of the scientific tools that are coming out of those areas and apply that to our area here. And so it's always a learning process. Some of the major fires that we saw, the car fire outside of Redding, the campfire outside of Paradise, California, you know, there's things that not only we as wildland fire scientists look at, but as emergency management and as town planners, as city planners start to look at this information. How can we better not only communicate information to the public, but how can we better build our infrastructures to be more resilient to these types of events? You know, what are we going to be looking at 10 years down the road or 30 years down the road? And how can we improve, say, building the west side of Rapid City in the face of maybe an unknown wildfire potential down the road?
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to In the Moment on SDPB Radio. My guest is Dr. Darren Klebo. He's the state's fire meteorologist. He's also on the faculty at the South Dakota School of Mines and Technology. And we're spending this hour talking about wildfire in the Black Hills from a variety of perspectives in particular. And because of the season last year was really, there was a lot to celebrate there. And people maybe got to exhale a little bit because of the wet season and the number of acres burned being such a reduction to the year prior. Let's talk about that communication with people. And it's not the time to be complacent, because at any given time this summer, there could be conditions that trigger something significant. Speak to that, if you would, please.
Sure. You know, we as humans tend to forget very, very easily. And it's part of my job as a scientist and a meteorologist and an employee for the state of South Dakota to ensure that we're continually communicating the overall risk to the public. And that's really, really hard. After a year like last year, we burned less than 5,000 acres across the state of South Dakota in the entire year last year. Contrast that with roughly 60 to 90,000 acres in the 4 years prior to that. And so coming off of a very wet year, a slow year, wildfires aren't necessarily at the forefront front of everybody's brains going into the summer wildfire season, and especially this year when we've been so incredibly wet over the past 60 days where no one's really thinking about wildfires. But it's always a great time to prepare your own home, your own properties to better mitigate future fire potential, or at least the risk towards your properties. So that means become fire-wise, ensuring that you're clearing out the brush. You're ensuring that your property has some defensible space around it in order to better prepare for those years that we know are coming that are going to have much, much higher wildland fire potential.
And I've been seeing more people refer to it as fire fitness in the sense that this is, you know, like your own personal fitness. You should be taking care of this all the time and not waiting for those high-risk days. But let's talk about those high-risk days. What are we looking for as the summer progresses when people should, you know, really pay heightened attention to the situation?
You know, if I could envision a worst-case scenario, if you will, we would have, you know, two or more weeks without any notable precipitation. We'd have temperatures in excess of, you know, 90 or 95 degrees. West to southerly winds, and during that same time period, and a lot of sunshine. I think sunshine is one of the most important things when it comes to wildland fire behavior because it really tends to dry out the fuels. And so let's just envision ourselves being in the middle of July, and if the end of July presents, you know, those hot, dry, somewhat breezy and sunny conditions, then that's definitely going to amp up the overall potential for wildfires starting in early August. So yeah, we can look at all the climate factors we want, but it is a lot of times these shorter term, you know, 2 week plus kind of a trends that we're looking at that really, really dictate what the overall fire potential is for any given area.
And we're going to talk in our next segment about the Smoky Bear and some of the efforts to really educate people and address that idea of the ignition that comes from humans and how humans contribute to starting these fires. But before we let you go, is there something that you want to say specifically to that? What do you want people to know about mitigating that human factor?
You know, if we could only allow, wildfires are always going to happen because we're always going to have lightning. But if we can mitigate the human-caused issues that are out there, let's do that. Let's take care of the things that we have control over. And so that's really ensuring that you're watching what you're doing. If you're out working in the fields, make sure you have a water source nearby or a fire extinguisher nearby, because mechanical issues are always going to come up. And those are definitely a big thing that start fires. If you're out recreating in the Black Hills, don't leave campfires unattended. You know, don't throw cigarettes around. Just make sure that we're doing what we can do in order to mitigate any type of ignition source that we can.
Darren Klebo is the state's fire meteorologist. Where do people follow online to sort of keep up with the outlook? Is there Twitter or do you have a website?
Yeah, I have a blog that's sdfireweather.blogspot.com. I have my Twitter handle is sdfireweather. If you just Google my name and Fireweather South Dakota, you'll probably come up with some of the products that I have that are out there. And I try to communicate all of these things as much as I can to the public.
Research scientist and state fire meteorologist Darren Klebo, thank you so much for being here with us today. We really appreciate your time as always.
Thanks for having me, Lori. I appreciate it.